want zombie takeout.
We are the United States government. We do not do that sort of thing.
Hello and welcome to episode 365 of Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie show. I'm John.
And hello, I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, saw the new Matrix movie over the weekend. One of the two movies I subscribed to HBO Max for, the other being Dune. And I'm not because I'm a big Matrix fan. I like the first one, but I think it's overrated. But David Mitchell of Cloud Atlas fame co-wrote the screenplay, and I'm a huge fan of his. So, I saw it this weekend, finally. And it's been on HBO Max for almost a month, so I'm going to say spoiler window is way open at this point.
Yeah, I don't think
or closed, whatever.
I don't know. did you say, I think you said 365.
Did I? 465, if
we
I said 365.
465. Yeah. Don't Sorry. Tell us 100 episodes short.
Yeah. So, anyway... It's spoilers are fair game at this point. It's been almost a month. So the reason I wanted to bring it up, I liked it. I think it's on par with the original. So take that as you will.
Have you seen the second and third one? Or
I've seen all four of them.
Okay. Okay.
I liked the first one. I think it's overrated. The middle two, we won't get into. The only real downside of 4 is it follows up from 3.
Okay.
So you kind of have to see all 3 or at least know what happened to kind of follow 4. You know, you can't just jump from 1 to 4, unfortunately.
That's unfortunate because I really don't have any plans in seeing 2 and 3 ever. I mean,
just read the plot summary.
I guess, unless we review them for some reason, if we mm-hmm. subject ourselves to that, Never say never.
I mean, if you want to watch 4, just read and you haven't seen 2 and 3, just read the plot summaries on Wikipedia. Much more enjoyable than the actual films. But the movie on its face has a bit of an anti-therapy message.
Really?
Neo's therapist, played by Neil Patrick Harris, turns out to be the big bad. And as someone who's been in therapy for 3.5 years and who swears by it, it has drastically improved my life. I have some issues with this. Now, I was looking into it online, and I found an article explaining how it's actually much more nuanced than that, and it's not really anti-therapy, but you have to kind of read into the movie a lot. And it made me wonder, if a piece of media or art has one message on the surface and a deeper message contrary to that that you have to kind of dig into, does that deeper message actually matter?
And isn't that the problem with the first Matrix too? I mean, it was co-opted by, you know, so many other people with agendas, or, you know, red pill, blue pill thing. Right. That's totally not what they were trying to say.
No. The original Matrix was Plato's cave mixed with anime.
Right.
And I mean, if I had never read the cave, I probably would have enjoyed it a lot more and wasn't familiar with anime. But you know, if it's one idea on the surface and that kind of jumps out at you, does it matter if there's something deeper? Because most people aren't going to bother to dig in to get the deeper meaning. They're just going to go with the surface meaning.
Right. And it's what I've always been saying about Star Wars and how everybody puts themselves in the shoes of the good guys, even if they are obviously the bad guys.
Yes, yes.
And who he intended the bad guys to be.
Anybody can see themselves as the rebel.
Right.
It puts me in mind of a poem I wrote a few years ago, Convenient Truth. I'm not going to recite it or anything. But right. It's one of my favorite pieces of mine, but it was written kind of sarcastically. And sarcasm doesn't really work in text.
Because the reader's voice might not necessarily have the same sarcasm that you're putting on it.
I've seen one particular comment where the person loved it, but took the exact opposite meaning that I intended.
Oh no. You
And
know, it is almost an impossible task to get into somebody else's mind and to be that crystal clear with what you're trying to say. So things happen.
I'm a big believer in death of the author.
Yeah.
The author's intention is irrelevant. That's their business. It's about what the audience, the consumer, if you will, takes from it. So I didn't correct this person, but I've never posted it anywhere but Hello Poetry. I've never put it on IG because I don't want to be misinterpreted. Basically, it's my perspective on how marginalized people are treated, and it's kind of sarcastic. Stand tall but not too proud.
Oh,
Speak up but not too
Christ, and
loud.
they took the other way. Oh, my God.
It's stand tall but not too proud. Speak up but not too loud. Don't free be afraid to be yourself, but only when allowed.
Oh, that's a bear. That's bad.
And they took it as written. This is the first half,
Oh.
but it gives you the idea.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, come on, I'm sorry. What did you say? I just took the words for what they were, man.
Yeah,
That wasn't me.
it's. I mean, it's kind of funny if I look at it from the right way. But point being, with this anti-therapy message in the Matrix, sure, the other interpretation tracks with the
Yeah.
film, but you have to really think about it to get there.
Right.
And
And you think they would
nobody.
have learned that with the first one, you know?
Well, most people aren't going to really think about it that deeply, so why? And knowing what I do about Lana Wachowski and Mitchell, they did not intend an anti-therapy message. So it's just.
Sometimes, no matter what the writer does, it's unavoidable, you know? People are going to take their own agenda into it and twist it to suit their needs. I mean, look at the Bible.
Yeah, and that's why I'm a fan of Death of the Author, because otherwise it's fucking whack-a-mole.
Yeah, it is.
But it just raised an interesting question. Anyway, on to this week's movie, which is from 1992, Sneakers. This is our Sidney Poitier tribute. Once again, another one who made it to his 90s.
And I heard he was a blind man.
It's just a nice change from all those rockers you kicked it at 70. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by the FBI. Breathing on the other end of your phone since 1908.
Also brought to you by the male version of the Mary Sue, the Robert Redford.
Technically, the Marty Stew, it's actually a thing, but Redford
Is
is the Marty Stew.
I guess, yeah, that I was trying to think of a male version of the name, the Marty Stew. That's perfect. All right.
But Redford in every role is a Marty Stew, so.
Marty Stew. Oh man, I hope that is that a thing already
It's
or they're
already a thing.
oh god damn it. All right. But yeah, this that fits with this movie. He was
Oh
Marty
yeah,
Bishop or
actually,
whatever.
yeah.
Okay. So I was like, did you just make that up?
No.
You could have totally been like, yeah.
Wish I could claim that.
Genius, man. All right. So we have a couple of kids hacking into everything as they did back in the late 60s. I think
It did exist. I mean, phone phreaking was a big thing back then.
I swear to God that was a Commodore 64 they were using, which is really.
Those terminals did look very early 80s. I have that in my notes.
Right. 1969, and I swear that was a Commodore 64. I thought I saw the little, color codes on the top of each key, but they were very fast with the camera work,
I
so you
googled
couldn't
late
really see.
'60s terminals. They existed, but they were much more boxy.
Of course. Man, yeah, computers took up rooms back then.
Well, they were smaller, desks, top terminals, but they were very boxy. Those things were like, I remember when we started at OCC, they had terminals like that.
I remember OCC had the punch cards.
So, those were '80s terminals. Anyway, continue.
So they were hacking into whatever they could and somehow were discovered. One of them was fortunate enough to go out for a pizza, but it kind of looked like he set his friend up because, okay, I'll leave. And then the authorities show right up. And he really didn't do anything to warn his friend, throw a rock at the window, yell, hey, get out of there. He just kind of ran up to the window just to see him being hauled off. And I was kind of hoping for an older Kevin Pollak, but Kevin Pollak would have been too young for that role in 92.
And I was sure those two were going to end up having to work together later in the film. That would have been a better film.
Yes, it would have been, but it turns out to be Ben Kingsley. But we'll get to him in a bit.
Now, bear in mind, the younger version of this character looked a lot like Kevin Pollak.
Yes.
Or David Hamer is another one who you reminded me of.
Young Robert Redford reminded me a lot of T.J. Miller.
Yeah, but he looked like Redford.
Yeah, he did
But going
actually.
from someone who looks like Pollak or Hamer to Ben Kingsley is a bit of a jump.
It's really weird. But anyway, so we go into the future, or 92, and they assume that his friend had died in prison. I don't know what the point of that was because, we knew that couldn't have been the end of his character because it happened off screen. And
And with that set up at the very beginning, obviously he's going to come back. There's going to be a conflict of one kind or another.
right. And so they Redford had some sort of strange security business where he like a white hat hacker, which I'm not sure if that term actually existed in 92 or not.
They were a thing. Security experts, hackers turned security experts were a thing in the late 90s. So I know they, because I knew someone in the late 90s who did that sort of thing. I'm sure they existed in the early 90s.
And so they're just, robbing banks kind of thing, getting into security that way. And then these two men in black show up. The professional asshole, Timothy Busfeld.
Great to see him.
They checked all the boxes of who, fits the troll. We need an asshole, Timothy Busfeld. We need a government agent, voice of God, James Earl Jones. So they show up. And it doesn't really take long to figure out they're not really NSA, but they form that as a big reveal, and it was kind of like a, huh, okay, yeah.
This professional hacker
Why
who
would
does
you check
not
the guys
vet the.
out? Why wouldn't they have checked the guys out?
Exactly. These professional hackers, particularly Marty, Redford's character, did not vet the supposed federal agents.
Sidney Poitier's character's next CIA guy. You don't think he would have connections to check, to run a check on, people that he's talking to?
This movie starts off kind of dull, but fairly smart. Midway through, gets more interesting, but a lot less intelligent.
I think they had the first two acts, are pretty, like they're setting the stage for something good. But that never comes. But anyway, they manage to get the MacGuffin that can uncode any code, and it does some really bad things, of course, if it falls into the wrong hands, to which Robert Redford drops it right into those wrong hands and then just, runs away and I think then gets captured by them where the second big reveal is that it's his old buddy that's behind everything. And rather than just taking this MacGuffin on his own, he got his old buddy involved and then set him up for a murder to try to get him thrown in prison as revenge.
And
Why, I mean, why wouldn't you just take the MacGuffin yourself and then after the fact get your buddy
Yeah.
thrown in jail? I mean, he wanted to give his buddy the chance to come and work with him and do what they did in the late 60s and turn,
Together we can rule the galaxy as father and son,
exactly, or what eventually became Fight Club, about taking, removing ownership of everything. And of course, Redford, his character and his great poker face just says, "You're crazy." And then, they of course, go to kill him, and he doesn't get killed yet again. And they come up with this ridiculous caper to steal the MacGuffin back. They painfully go through. It's like the entire third act of the film is just them doing this whole plot, this harebrained plot, to steal this thing back, which the fourth act is them doing the big heist and all of the weirdness of the caper, but it all works out perfectly in the end. And then they finally, the government agent Darth Vader ex machina comes out to make a deal after everything is settled, and hilarity ensues.
You know how the Ocean's 11 movies, at least the first one, that's the one I've seen, made the explanation of the caper really fun and interesting? Drag that out to about 20 minutes and make it really boring.
I after like really I think this could have been this was setting up a really good movie, and then the end of the second act happens where the drop off, the drop off ends the second act, and it's just so dumb after that
The
point.
reveal of, they were not, government agents
It's like,
is when it went downhill for me.
well, right, and this the whole like he just puts it on the table, doesn't get, doesn't have them show money or anything back. Just here it is. Here you go. And then him getting away somehow, even though he's standing right in front of them.
It's kind of okay, like, the movie we haven't talked about in a while, Primer. In order for the magic trick in that movie to work, no, the other one, Abe, has to be really dumb at one point, has to do one really dumb thing, but they hide that one really dumb thing so you don't notice.
I think we bring Primer up. I think Carruth has just been arrested. Maybe
Oh,
that's why you're
wow.
thinking of it. Yeah.
Oh, I need to look into that.
Yeah.
But there's if you really analyze Primer, and it takes a lot to analyze Primer, what they slip past you is Abe makes one major miscalculation that makes the rest of the plot work.
And think about it, Primer is an hour less than this movie.
And they hide that miscalculation, so you have to see the movie many times to realize, oh, okay, that's where they slipped it past me.
Right.
This movie, they put it right on the table.
Oh yeah, he literally puts it right on the table. Like, there's no like, hey, this thing could like kill millions.
Well, and it's not just that. It's this professional hacker who we're led to believe is a fucking genius just did something incredibly fucking stupid.
Yeah, because it's obvious right from the beginning that like, why would you trust these guys just because they had a wanted poster? I did like that they do bring up the fact before the reveal that there's only so many people that knew his secret, and they threw blame on his ex-girlfriend first, not realizing, well, no, there's other people that knew the secret.
Now, I should mention writers Lawrence Lasker and Walter F. Parks first conceived the idea of this movie in 81 while doing research for War Games.
Interesting,
They also wrote War Games. I kind of don't want to revisit War Games now because I'm afraid it's going to be just as stupid. Although War Games was about a kid, so you've got
Right.
more leeway there. I mean, yeah, he was
Exactly.
a
These are
computer
supposed to be
genius.
professionals. This is, ex-CIA guy, a couple of hack like three ha professional hackers, and whatever the fuck River Phoenix was supposed to have
Right,
been.
the gopher.
I forgot River Phoenix was in this movie until he fell from the ceiling.
It took me like half the movie to recognize him.
He had like three or four scenes. He was kind of an assistant. He snuck into the building at one point before the heist, and then I just completely forgot he was there in
And
this thing.
was this before he was huge, or like during his height?
I thought this was one of his last movies,
Oh, could have.
actually.
Yeah, I think
I
he
don't think he
passed in
lived
the early
much
'90s.
longer after this.
So I'm surprised he had such a small part. But to work with Redford and Poitier and Aykroyd,
Yeah, he passed on Halloween of 93.
Oh, okay. So this was
It
well into
was,
his
yeah,
career. He had the
it was
reputation at
one
this
of
point.
his last ones.
Wow.
And honestly, there were just too many dudes in this movie.
But, okay. To see, and I'm jumping way ahead here. I'm going to roll back in a minute. To
Okay.
see Redford, Poitier, and Aykroyd playing off of each other, I won't say it was worth the price of admission, but it easily bought it a brain.
I honestly, like, if you combined Aykroyd and Phoenix's character, I think this would have been a better movie.
Well, a lot of things could have made it a better movie, but seeing those three playing off of each other, particularly Poitier and Aykroyd, was beautiful.
In fact, here's my proposal that if we had a time machine after killing Hitler, we go here and we tell them you don't need Robert Redford, even though I think he got most of this cast together. You put Aykroyd in Redford's role,
Oh, yeah.
and then you have Phoenix
In
as
Aykroyd's role.
Aykroyd's role,
Yeah.
the conspiracy theorist, the nut, and all that. And
Much better film, and you fix those writing issues, but
yeah.
much better film, but it's not going to sell like this one did, or it's not going to get,
I was gonna say, did this sell that
well,
much?
it's not going to get the bank that this one did. They bet, I'd imagine Redford got them to bet a lot of money on this film.
Yeah, that is what I saw in the back end of this, that a lot of the people got into this because of Redford, which I'm not honestly sure why.
But rolling back to the beginning, we had Hack the Planet in 69, which seemed a little unusual. I have, going a bit forward, one of the characters, Whistler, he's a phone freaker and he's blind. Nice portrayal of disability overall. I have to give him credit for that. I have kind of mixed feelings about the Braille Playboy joke. And with Aykroyd's character, I mean, all due respect to Aykroyd, he's always brilliant, but I mean, he chooses some iffy movies, but he's always brilliant. Conspiracy freaks in movies just aren't that funny anymore.
Well, right. The stuff he was saying back in 92 was kind of, people chuckle at
It
it
was
back then.
outrageous.
Yeah. But now it's kind of like oh yeah, you've been on the internet too.
We'll say this one didn't feel as dated as some of the 90s films we've reviewed.
Yeah.
Nice seeing Donald Logue as this turtleneck wearing Jobs stand-in. I did get a kick out of that. He was Steve Jobs, but it was Donald Logue. Loved the line, "Now that our countries are such good friends," from a Russian. That didn't age well. We all, those of us, over 40 something, remember, that whole period in the late 80s, early 90s, where that was kind of true, at
Well,
least on the
yeah,
surface.
it was a big shock. It was just all of a sudden someone flipped a switch and it was just everything was different.
Now, Redford's role reminded me of his role in the MCU. He's the head of SHIELD and who's also a Hydra agent. Sorry, spoilers. Like the head of Hydra. It's still Flight of the Con. Well, not Flight of the Condors. He was the Gordon Brownstein, one of them too, the Nixon guys in that one. But he's like this government agent guy. He's in the suit. It's kind of, he's either that or he's like, the Western guy. It's kind of what he does. He's either one of those two roles. He's either in a suit or he's out, in the flannel.
I don't know. I just feel he's, well, I guess they are the same role pretty much. You just dress differently.
All due respect to Redford, he's made a career and he's very watchable. But he is the
Did you
same
catch the
guy.
Alex Winter sighting?
Alex Winter, was it?
I believe he was one of the college students
Nice.
that the professor was talking to after his lecture.
Nice.
Which
Oh,
is
just.
odd because, I mean, this is a couple of years after Bill and Ted.
Yeah. Just a quick call, go back to the Matrix for a brief second. As much as I have criticized young Keanu, I like old Keanu.
Really?
He has grown into that role. It's very much like in Face the Music. He kind of fits that role now.
I just feel like you're seeing Keanu in,
You always are.
yeah.
He's the same guy. It just works for me now.
We need to get him and Nicolas Cage to do a movie together. And I feel like we also need to get Robert Redford and Bill Pullman to do a movie together.
The first one I want to see that could be absolutely genius, Cage and Keanu. Pullman and Redford, no, you couldn't pay me to watch
I would call it Bland and Blander.
that. The Chain of Fools dance montage was painful. That was really the first spot where I'm like, no. I was kind of the first mark against the film. Although I will say scrunchie was a word in 92. I had long hair back then. I used them on a daily basis.
Of course.
And about halfway through the film, I realized as much as I was enjoying the cast, also got a shout out, Mary McDonnell, the president from the new Battlestar Galactica, or the newer.
Yes, that's where I know her from. I was
Yeah,
kind of trying to.
she was great. But as much as I was enjoying the cast about halfway through, I lost interest in the MacGuffin. I kind of forgot what it
Yeah.
was.
It was just too, it was too magical.
Yes.
It just magically gets you into whatever site you want to get into.
Yeah.
Like, oh, come on.
It's this box. I don't know if you talked about it. It's this black box that can decrypt any website or any computer.
Anything. Every code is the same in the US. Apparently the Russian codes are different, and that's a plot point. But it just makes no sense. Like,
And
okay, every code's the same.
the way it changed on screen, the code, you went from this gibberish to the website or the computer code you were supposed to say.
Yeah.
It was less realistic than the Matrix code, but it looked cool. I think Tron was more realistic than that, what happened on the screen in that those moments, but it looked cool. The movie spent
That's not
40,
how this works, God damn
but
it.
it also spent 45 minutes getting to that. Like, that was the part where I was. They explained the MacGuffin and how it can decrypt any computer. And I was kind of in at that point. I was interested, but it took 45 minutes to get there.
Yeah, I think stuff needed to happen a lot differently, you know. I, you know, the curve should have come from completely out of nowhere, you know. Or just, you know, his friend should have completely gotten in the way of the deal and framed him in some other way. Because it really doesn't make any sense that you would bring someone else in on this MacGuffin thing if it's so important.
And even though that was super telegraphed, the one thing that I thought they were telegraphing that was just really questionable writing. After they figure out what the black box does, it's the night before they're going to hand it over to the feds, and it's a lock-in because they can't trust in each other because
Yeah.
they all have access to this golden goose. Liz, Mary McConnell's character, Redford's character's ex, is really offended about having to spend the night there in this lockdown, which to me kind of telegraphed she's guilty. Either she has no criminal past, she doesn't get this, which is hard to believe from a hacker's ex, or she's guilty and she's setting them up.
Well, I mean,
Otherwise,
something
she would
could.
understand the lockdown.
Yeah, that was the problem with her character. It didn't seem like she really got the situation she was in. Yeah,
No.
it was just this, okay, so I'm gonna go and meet up with the worker, the lab assistant, and get info off him, and just eat, and then like wind up in the headquarters like that and just be so casual about everything.
And she gets sold out because she leaves her purse on the coffee table while going to the restroom, and to signal, the other guys that she needs to get out. She needs an extraction, basically. And this robot dog that the lab assistant was showing her knocks her purse off the table, and he sees her ID.
The lab assistant, by the way, is the principal on the show, The Goldbergs.
Jeffrey, Not Jeffrey Tambor.
Tobolowsky, I think.
That's it. Stephen Tobolowsky. That's it. But, like, okay, why would you bring your actual ID to a situation where you're
undercover?
Yeah, thank you.
Doesn't make any sense.
Also, the Russians knew the pseudonym of the fake NSA guys, but the hackers couldn't figure it out. And then we get, you know, Kingsley as Cosmo, his ex-partner. I can't tell if it was a paycheck role or not.
The accent was, he should have been paying us, I felt. Holy Christ, that was a bad accent. I couldn't even tell you what the accent was supposed to have been. It like went from kind of a British to a New York to like something else. It was Costnerian, I guess you could say.
And good call. And the thing is, Kingsley, yeah, he picks some bad movies. He'll do anything for a dollar. But his acting is always solid.
I'm sitting here thinking,
he's a great actor.
This motherfucker played Gandhi like 10 years before that.
He's a great actor. He picks bad movies for money, but he is a great actor. But this is so foamed in. This is why I'm like, well, I mean, given the cast, I guess I get why you'd want to be in the film other than the paycheck.
I want a ponytail.
But he was so phoned in. It just didn't make sense that he would be so phoned in that in a movie that, you know, wasn't such an obvious paycheck role.
It's kind of one of the worst jobs I've seen of having a younger actor aged into like an older one, you know. Yeah. Oh, and it's kind of shocking that would happen in a movie of this size and budget.
And the actor, you know, who plays, you know, Cosmo in the beginning of the movie, I've seen recent pictures. He looks a lot like David Hamer, who was about the right age at this point, I think. There's plenty of other people who could, honestly, like, he's kind of generic Jewish guy. You know, you could put a lot of people in that role who of the right age, other than Kingsley, who just does not look right. Now, a bit about Whistler, the blind guy. Again, good portrayal of disability. Would have been better to cast a blind actor. Especially since the actor they cast wasn't, like, a name.
Right. There was really no excuse for it. And I don't know, what did you think of the whole, like, he can drive kind of scene?
Well, first off, you know, he is a bit of a super creep. But the fact that he's a phone freaker kind of justifies that. That developed his hearing. He has, like, super, super hearing.
Yeah.
He's a phone freaker, so that makes sense that it would have developed that. They did the blind guy driving thing, yes, which is a cliche. It's a trope. But at least he wasn't driving well.
Yeah.
You know, he was, you know, crashing into shit, so I'm okay with it. Now, before they set up the date with the lab assistant that she goes on, she says he's looking for someone anal. Anal retentive.
Yeah.
And I don't know which is funnier, the fact that that's a really outdated term, or the innuendo.
I don't know if it was outdated back then, though.
No, it wasn't that outdated in 92. People still bought a lot of fridge bullshit.
I think it was quite frequently used back then, yeah. Actually.
Well, in the 80s more so, but...
Yeah. No, I think I still remember people, at least in Ocean County, using that term.
Oh, yeah. It just kind of got a kick out of it being such an outdated term. And in the context, it's not like, you know, a shrink saying you're anal retentive. It's her saying that this guy who they're going to try, she's going to try to seduce, basically, is looking for someone anal.
Oh, I thought she said he was looking for anal.
And again, you know, this guy who is, they try to seduce him because his voice is used to get into the lab where they're keeping the MacGuffin.
Yeah.
They need a recording of his voice. He doesn't vet Liz, even though he's bringing her to his place.
And, you know, even though passport is part of the verbal key, he has a red flag of her making him say the word passport. doesn't do anything.
This is a movie where people with a supposedly very intelligent people with a lot to lose suddenly lose all of their intelligence.
Like, think about that. If you know you have to use that particular phrase to activate something, and then you meet up with this woman who's just like, out of nowhere and just, making you say things that are in that phrase, point blank saying she loves to hear someone say the word passport. Like, right there, I would be like, check, please. This is not. This is not really going on. But he was kind of like, yeah, sure.
And they were kind of playing it like he was just desperate and getting, just drunk on attention from a woman.
Right.
But they didn't really pay that off.
No.
I did appreciate Kingsley's rant of, that essentially established that he's an incel. It's his rant to Redford's character about how, Marty always got all the women.
Kingsley's stuff was a good 30 years ahead of its time,
Yeah.
or 20 years ahead of its time at least.
I mean,
All of the things he says in this movie.
making the villain an incel very ahead of its time. I did get a kick out of Liz saying she's an excellent markswoman while the gun in her hand is shaking.
Right. Well, she would never be able to make the shot.
No.
That was good.
I've never fired a gun, but I'm pretty sure if it's visibly shaking, that's not a good thing.
No, that's not the sign of a good
No.
marksperson.
And then we get this cliche rant. This is might be what you're talking about, Kingsley. The rant about how the world is run on information. It
Yeah.
feels horribly cliche now,
Oh, yeah.
but maybe not in 92.
I was thinking that, like, all of this is just like you could just have a conversation with somebody, and no one would think, whoa, yeah, that's obviously what a villain of a movie would say now. A lot of people would just be like, no shit, of course.
And, of course, we find out that Redford stole the guts out of the box that before the MacGuffin before he gave it back to Kingsley's character. Like, that's a third reveal that was like, oh yeah, of course.
Yeah.
The bit about American the government spying on Americans was kind of evergreen.
Definitely. Hoover was doing it
Yeah.
so much, and just the fact getting the chip away from Kinsley and just getting out of there was just completely ridiculous. If anything, that is when the government agents should have shown up and sorted things out.
Now, I did like Whistler's request at the end. Kingsley shows up as the actual Fed, and in exchange for the chip, they're requesting, all of these, just,
James Earl Jones comes in as the actual Fed.
And they're requesting all of, the X amount of thousands of dollars and all of these, trips to Europe and all of these things in exchange for it. And then Whistler just says, I want, what is it, good peace on earth, goodwill toward men.
Yeah.
Loved that. And I have to give it credit, there was no romantic subplot.
I was wondering if it was going to happen or not. I mean,
They didn't get back together.
they actually set the groundwork for it to happen, but yeah.
And they avoided it. I love that. That bought it half a brain.
It's very realistic, actually, that this experience would make her say,
Yeah.
"Yeah, I'm going to stay away from this dude for the future."
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to hang around him much anymore. Because bad things could really happen.
Sequels and remakes.
Sequels and remakes.
In October 2016, NBC was developing a TV series based on the film. Writer Walter Parks was brought on as executive producer. That was 5 years ago, so could be in development hell.
I don't
Depending on the
understand why
cast.
you'd remake this. It's like it's so blasé now. I mean, this was ahead of its time in that aspect, but now it's almost 10 years behind now if you do it.
I mean, a group of hackers, you know, if they can get, I mean, they're not going to get the original cast, obviously, but I think you can put the right people together in those roles, it could be good.
I wish they did give Poirier more in this, you know.
Oh, I
The
didn't
scenes he
mention
had were really good.
he has his best line ever committed to film. At one point, the fake feds are trying to, attack him, and it's, what would we say? Motherfucker, mess with me, I'll split your head. Just to hear Poitier curse was.
And him trying to get a good look at the couple who sounded like they were going at it, but visually nowhere near that point of
No, no.
I guess filmed, my guess is they had something else filmed and then they came back with something else to make sure the rating was not too high, but they still had the audio.
On brains.
On a brains.
Most of this was kind of just straight down the middle. For me, I like the cast, but I had to take points away because they just got so fucking stupid. But then there was no romantic subplot, so I had to add points. I ended up landing on a three.
I'm going right down the middle with it too. I'm going 2.5 because they really had the makings of something good here. They were way ahead of their time. Although this was kind of the same. Is this really all that different from Hackers, honestly, plot-wise? It's just younger people in Hackers, older
I
people
came
here.
up with that title for this episode title while when we first started talking about reviewing this one, and at the time I was just kind of it was a joke that sounded good,
Yeah.
and I kind of fell in love with it in the moment.
It sums it up.
It
You know,
really it ended up fitting the movie perfectly.
I was thinking a lot about how, like, movies for adults versus movies for kids, and it's obviously the same subject matter, but one's for each demo. It's very strange because they were like right around the same time.
I think Hackers was like 5 years later, I want to say. Well,
What?
no, I think it was maybe 94, 95.
Okay, so it was just a few years after
It was a
this.
little after this, but not by much. Obviously, I prefer Hackers. I love Hackers, but maybe because I was the right age when I saw Hackers.
Right.
Although I'm the right age for this now, but this is 30 years out of date, so
Yeah.
if I was my current age in 92 and saw this in a theater, maybe I
This was
would have been
good
more
for
on
the
board.
90s, just not beyond that.
And that's it for Sneakers. Until next time, we'll be reviewing Voyage to the Planet of Prehistoric Women. This is our Peter Bogdanovich tribute. Good old-fashioned old B movie.
I'm glad we came back early just so we could get all of these tributes knocked off.
We're not taking credit for these deaths, especially not Betty White. Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
There
are.
you are.